Hey, what's going on, everybody? My name is Elliot Towsley, and this is the Business of Music podcast. Thank you for joining us. My business partner, James Landry, and I go back and forth about how we can help independent artists market their own music. If you have more questions, follow us on Instagram or come to denovoagency.com and we'll be happy to help. Enjoy! Everybody, welcome back to the Business of Music podcast. My name is Elliot Towsley. I am here with my business partner, James Landry. James, what's up, man?
Not much. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's a rainy Friday here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it has been a long time since we have gotten together to do one of these podcasts. There's been a lot going on in our lives and the world. Chalk it up to 2020 being a disaster. I think it's been like 2 months, I think, since the last time we really sat down to have a podcast here. So it might be a good idea to kind of just do a quick little update. Let's kind of set the parameters of what the business of music is looking like right now, both for independent artists and major artists. Recently, Kanye West has been in the news a lot. What else is new? But this time it's for him talking about his contract situation with Universal, and I believe Def Jam, and his relationship with Jay-Z. Another interesting part of that relationship is kind of coming out now in terms of what's going on in the contracts there. But Kanye West has been in the news most recently because he's announced that he is giving back his ownership of the good music that his company, he owns a portion of Big Sean's music, Kid Cudi's music, designer's music, probably Pusha T, and like whoever else is on that roster. Even Abstract, what is his name from Tribe Called Quest? Why am I blanking right now? Man, but he was even on Good Music at one time. So there's a lot of people who are on Good Music who in their the Good Music company and Kanye West owned a portion of all of this music. And Kanye has now announced that he is giving back that portion of ownership to the musicians. And I think James will have a great take on all of this from the legal perspective of like, how did he get this ownership in the first place? How easily of a transition of it is to say, here, you own this now. Break it down a little bit for us in terms of legal ramifications on both Kanye and on the artists of good music and what you think that how this might impact the business of music as a whole.
Yeah. So Kanye actually said he was going to give 50% of the masters back. I haven't seen any contracts obviously of this. I don't know anything about it other than Kanye claiming he's going to get 50% back.
No, one thing was that, because I saw something that said he's giving his 50% stake back. Because my guess is Kid Cudi owned 50% and Good Music owned 50%. Is he giving all of that 50% back, or does he own 50% and he's giving 50% of his cut back?
The normal way, he would own 100%. There's no way that they agreed to 50%, 50-50, unless it was a later amended contract. So he probably owns 100%. He's giving 50% back to them. For really, all that's going to do allow them to collect money off of streaming revenue and not have to wait to the split and let the label take their percentage split. So for example, normally it's like an 80-20% split. Label takes 80%, artist takes 20%. Label recoups all expenses recording that master. So if it costs $200,000 to record that master, the label would recoup 100% until they hit that 200,000 and then recoup 80% of all profits after that. Now, that would be 80% of the 100% of the master's profits. So instead, it's going to come down to probably, if I do the math, instead of 100% them taking 80% of it, they're going to take 80% of 50%. Does that make sense? So the artist is automatically going to get 50%. And then the other 50% would go to the label, but the label only takes 80% of it. So it's really going to be dependent on the contracts, because the label technically could still only be taking 20% instead of the old 80% or 40%, depending on the breakdown. There's a lot of math. It's complicated. I really have to see what the contract says for me to understand what they're doing.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because Kanye made his personal contract. Now, this is outside of, or it includes Good Music, but he himself has a contract with Universal or whatever major label he is with. And he took to Twitter and tweeted out screenshots or pictures of his entire like 100-page contract or however long it was. And I know you spent some time diving into that. So what was there anything in there that did he get, like, was this a total standard record deal, or did he get some special things because he's Kanye West? You know, my guess is he didn't sign this. It's not the first contract he ever signed with Rockefeller back in 2004 or whenever that was, when he was kind of not essentially a nobody, but obviously not who he is now. So once he had that leverage, was he able to get a good deal? Is this a good deal that he just says, okay, yep, but things are different now, we got to change it? Or was this a bad deal from the beginning?
So at the beginning, the first contract he tweeted was 47 pages, maybe 48 pages, and it covered everything. It was the standard agreement. The label took 80-90% of everything, and Kanye got the leftovers after they recouped their fees. The other agreements he tweeted were just amendments to that deal. So that deal included 7 albums, and they amended that deal and started giving Kanye more and more percentage. At the beginning, he was only getting like 20%. I think the last amendment put him up to like 80%. So he had the leverage and he was collecting the money. Nothing in that contract surprised me. He didn't like it because he doesn't understand it and says it's heavy for legalese, and everyone, no artist understands it. And that's really the reason he was tweeting it, was to show no one understood it. But in those deals, you can see how much leverage he had. Because he kept, every year and a half, he got a new amendment. And he was getting, his records cost millions of dollars to make. Because he'll sample something and then just tell Universal, take care of it. And it just cost them millions of dollars to clear these records. But he still had the leverage where he was still collecting 80% after they recovered their fees. And that's why people own the masters. It costs so much money for these people. Like Kanye specifically, he samples a lot. And when he samples that much, it costs a lot of money to clear those samples. Because Kanye's not going to do it. And that's part of the reason you signed to a label. You let them deal with it. And when they're dealing with it, that's how Kanye can be creative freedom, have creative freedom. But ultimately, that's why they own the masters. They had to pay millions of dollars out of pocket. And they're not just going to give them back. They need to recoup their money. Record labels are bankrolled by one big artist. Every other artist they lose money on. They will never recover the money from most of the artists that they have. But having someone like Kanye makes it so that they're profitable and keep investing in other artists. In a way, signing to a label, big artists being on labels, supports independent artists and allows them to have a chance to sign. If all these big artists leave, like if Drake doesn't re-sign when he's up soon, it's going to hurt the music industry as a whole. Because these record labels are no longer going to be able to invest in these upcoming artists and let them be creative. And only the people with money will really be able to succeed as an independent artist without labels investing in them.
Right. And that's an interesting like thought of what the music industry might start to look like. If Drake does go and just say, screw it, I'm doing OVO, I'm doing it my way on the internet, and I don't need any of you. That's going to be a big eye opener, because you see a lot of people who are independent now or people who started independent kind of still eventually get to the point where a label makes sense. You know, Wiz Khalifa was famously independent in like on Rostrum for a long time. Eventually he went to Warner because eventually it just makes sense. But it's almost like if Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, James Harden all left the NBA and just said, hey, I'm just going to play at his house. And if all the top talent leaves this group, this organization, then the organization really doesn't have as much leverage to do anything. And just like the NBA, if all the top stars leave and start generating or are no longer generating that income, then the middle tier and lower tier players who are benefiting from the TV money that Kevin Durant and LeBron James are generating, they're going to lose out too. So this is an interesting dynamic where does this now give way more, if Drake leaves and goes independent, does this now give a lot more leverage and gusto to people who are independent and are doing their own thing? Or does it make those middle and lower tier people who may have connections at record labels, if they can no longer be funded and now they're forced to be independent? It's an interesting thing to think about, because, you know, a lot of people, everyone's all, I got to be independent, I want to be independent. You know, there's a reason that all of these artists are on record labels. Like, you know, the thing is with the record, it's not like they're all villains and every record deal period is garbage. It's just, it's a deal. They've got to get something out of it too. And a lot of time artists are not happy when they realize, wait a minute, that's what you're getting. That's not how I thought it was going to go. And then they're like, the record labels are like, well, what do you mean? We laid it out all right here. And it's just like, expectations are like the mother of disappointment. So, yeah, that's a very interesting thing to think about if Drake does indeed go independent. But I think our guest is here now. So today, let's bring on King Trey. James, bring him on in here. Can he hear us this whole time?
I don't know.
King Trey, how you doing, my man?
Hey, what's up, guys?
It's good to see you, brother. Happy Friday. Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Happy Friday.
Now, James and I were just saying that we haven't done a podcast here in a long time. It's been a little while since we've talked to our audience this way, and we wanted to come back with a bang and bring in a guest and start highlighting some artists or an artist that we've been working with a little bit. But you're really starting to see a lot of success on Spotify. King Trey has just passed 100,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. He's got a new project. He's got a lot of features both out and coming. Trey, tell our listeners and our audience a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what your music business is looking like these days.
So I'm Trey, AKA King Trey. I'm 21 years old. I'm from Chicago's bordering suburb. Like, I literally live on the border. My street is like the border of Chicago and a suburb called Evanston. I live on the Evanston side of the border. I've been doing music for as long as I can remember. I was in the studio at like, I recorded my first song, I was like 7 years old in the studio. I started going to the studio on my own. I was like 14, booking time myself. And then I started putting it out on SoundCloud. I was like 14 as well. I started trying to make a career out of this. I want to say I was like 17. In 2017, I got really serious about it. Started, you know, putting out projects on all the platforms, you know, trying to get to the blogs, you know, just trying to get to the Chicago radio stations at first, because that's what I thought, you know, you needed. And, you know, I'm just a really hard worker. I've just been working really hard for a bunch of years. And, you know, things are starting to look up. The last two calendar years, 2019 and 2020, have been pretty big. In 2019, I just hit my first 100,000 streams total. This year I'm on pace to hit 1 million total streams.
Boom.
Last year Sprite offered me an endorsement deal, a sponsorship contract. I'm a brand ambassador now. I put out my first full length project in April of this year. That did pretty well. Got some bigger features on it. And I've been dropping singles via DeNovo Agency all summer, and we'll keep doing it all fall. Just dropped a track that I like a lot with a bigger artist, Code of the Friend, who I look up to a lot. It's crazy. I'm even on a song with him, to me. And yeah, just trying to keep growing the business. It's, you know, it's doing well, slowly but surely, one step at a time, we'll get to where we're going.
So how much Sprite do you get for free?
I mean, there was no free in, talked about the contract. I probably should have asked for that at the negotiation table. But there's no free Sprite.
Not even 1 2-liter, huh?
Not even. I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would.
Now, Trey, I got a question for you. So when you start making music at such a young age, like 7, right? One, that's really cool that you had experience to get in a studio, and you probably just thought it was like, this is just normal, you know? This is what everybody does.
Yeah.
I kind of have a 2-part question. Like, when in your life did you realize that that isn't the norm for kids or for people?
Yeah.
And two, when was the second realization of thinking, this isn't, or this can be more than a hobby? And you went from like a fun music hobby to, wait a minute, I might have a business here. So can you give me those, like, describe what those 2 aha moments were like for you?
Yeah. My father used to rap. He wasn't very good, but he used to go to the studio. So really, I've been in the studio since I was a baby. Like, I was 2 years old, 3 years old, and I was just there because, like, he didn't have anybody to watch me, and he had a session, and I went to the session. And I'm pretty sure there's a song where, like, I'm the intro. I said his rap name or something, and I'm, like, 3 years old, and it sounds like a baby saying, like, his rap name. And he, like, picked me up and put me in front of the mic and told me to say his rap name. So I've been in there. And then, like, one of his friends, I was, like, 7, and I had been writing songs since I was trying to write songs since I was a baby, because I saw my dad writing songs. So I couldn't even spell or read, but I would be like, Mom, I thought of a rap, can you write it down for me? And she would write down what I would say to her and what my rap was. And then, like, I would come back, like, you know, the next day and the following day and the following day, and, like, I would just know that what I was thinking was what she wrote. And this was, like, 4 or 5. So I started learning how to read and write because I was trying to write raps. So
awesome.
And so I started writing songs, I think maybe 6 or 7. By 6, I knew how to read and spell. So I'd been writing songs since I was 6 on my own. And then when I was 7, one of my dad's friends, I, like, rapped something for him. And he was like, you know, like, that's really good for, especially for a 7-year-old. Like, do you want to come with me to the studio and record it? So I was like, yeah, I was really excited. And yeah, I thought that was normal, but I think I realized it wasn't when I, like, got to high school, maybe like my freshman year. Other people, like, around, like, obviously I would come to school in like 5th grade and middle school and be like, hey guys, listen to my song. And I was the only one saying anything like that, like having a song that was recorded. But in high school, other people started doing it, and I would just realize that some people were recording it in their voice memos on their phone, or some people were trying to get a computer and or like go to their friend's house who had a microphone. And just like, I started to realize when I maybe was like 14 that, man, I'm probably the only 14-year-old who has an engineer's number, and I like call them like, I get 2 hours this day. So that, yeah, around 13 or 14, I realized that. And then I always knew that I was going to be a music artist. I realized I had a business when I just realized that music was a business. Like, I think I was like 16 or 17, and I was like, okay, so people don't just put out songs and get famous. Like, that's not how it happens. I realized that at like 16 or 17. So then I realized at 16 or 17 that, okay, I need to carry myself as if I am a business. So at 16 or 17, you know, I deleted all the Instagram posts that weren't about music, and I like made like a management email for myself, and I like, you know, started reaching out to people. I started carrying myself as if it were a business at, you know, I was like a junior, so 16 or 17. So it wasn't a realization that, oh, like, I might have a business. It was a realization that, oh, if I am an artist, I also am a business. When I realized that those, like, you can't have one without the other, that's when that happened.
That's an interesting take. You said something interesting where it wasn't that you realized that you could have a business. You realized that you had to have a business.
Yeah.
And you realized that music is a business. Yes, so sir. Was there a third aha moment where you're like, wait a minute, and my business might be able to like make money?
Yeah.
When was that?
I want to say last year, because again, when I went into it with a mindset like, okay, now I have to have a business, I always thought it was going to make money. To like last year, I started realizing like I'm actually doing what I set out to do. Like it was a goal, and like now I'm like it's happening, and I just need to make it continue to grow. So yeah, around last year, I realized like, man, like, cause you know, things normalize to you. Like if you like to normal people, 20,000 followers, or like someone with a million followers, that would normalize to them, and 20,000 would seem like 10 followers. But to like your average person, 20,000 followers on Instagram, you get 1,000 something likes, you get a bunch of comments. That's like not normal. And like you put out songs and there's hundreds of thousands of streams and big artists reach out to you and, you know, Sprite sends you checks. And like, to me, I don't feel like as if I'm anywhere near I need to be, anywhere near where I need to be or famous at all. But to your average person, they look at me and like, oh yeah, he's kind of famous. But to me, like this is all normalized and I feel really small. So yeah, like it was hard for me to like be like, okay, so like I'm actually in there. I'm just like, I need to get further in there. But that happened like last year, 2019.
James is probably dealing with his dogs. James, can you hear us over there, man?
Yeah, my dogs are walking around. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you realized at a young age and put you where you are now is the fact you were trying to make money with music. You weren't just releasing music trying to become famous. Most people we talk to are, they want to be famous. Great. But before you become famous, you need to find a way to make money or else you're not going to have enough time to become famous. And that's a big thing. People need time to invest into their music business to succeed. And that's kind of what you've done. Now, before the COVID shutdown, how often were you doing shows?
You know, it was here and there. I had done a mini tour, like a 10-day run. I hit like 4 states in 2018. And then 2019, I hit a couple. I hit like Ohio once. I hit New York once. I did some shows here and there. I did a really big one in my hometown. A bigger artist came through, and then I was like, I can sell tickets in Chicago. So I got an opening gig for him, and that one was really big. So, you know, I want to say like, we'll just put it like every other month.
So would you say that was your main source of income?
No. Because I only make money for Chicago shows. So one Chicago show last year, I did 2 Chicago shows in 2019. One, I made $1,500. I made a lot. And I was on stage for like 40 minutes. So $1,500 in 40 minutes, that's good pay rate. And then one, I made like $400. But when I go to like Ohio and do a show, I might make like $50. It's really just for the exposure. I couldn't before really sell many tickets in other states other than Chicago. In Ohio, I made like the Ohio show I did last year, I sold maybe like 8 tickets, like 8 yeah. people. And it's because I had been to Ohio 2 times before and sold 0 tickets, but I met people and they were like, you're good. If you come back, let me know. And then last time I went, I sold 8. But, you know, things have grown a lot, so it's hard to gauge where I am because, again, you can't really get out there right now. But, yeah, so it was –
as an upcoming artist, that's what I expect at least. Most people – I ask is most people expect to be making money off of shows immediately. Like I've got 5,000 listeners. I'm going out. I'm doing shows. I'm gonna just set up a tour. I can only imagine how many times Elliot, when he was an artist, performed for free, or actually had to pay to perform.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think a lot of people, a lot of artists, and a lot of musicians in particular, it seems that their ego can be an obstacle and not a strength.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play for free. I have 10,000 streams.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of musicians they're not choosing to be. I think they just happen to be short-sighted. And they don't see the benefit of, well, if I go and play this show free today, I might meet 15 people that love me. And when I come back, now I got 10 tickets.
Yeah.
Or they don't see they don't view it as, oh, well, if I play this show for free, maybe I pay a photographer $100 to come with me. And now I get a shit ton of good photos. I get a bunch of good videos, and I can show that I'm rocking with a crowd and people like my music. And now I have a bunch of content that I can use to book a show that pays me.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't seem willing to do that, or they think that they're above it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's such a mistake, you know, because it's all networking. Say if you go and you do a show for some promoter, and he's actually a good one, the 1 out of 10 promoters who are actually good, but say he is good. And if you do a really good show for free, if he promotes for 5 other venues in the city, he's going to be like, hey dude, you did this for free and you killed it. How about, you know, $500 to do next Thursday at the other place I'm at?
Maybe. Yeah.
But it's really interesting and cool for you to see, I'm sure, to see that, like, you know, a year or two ago, you're doing a free show. And now, like, you're sponsored by Sprite. You have 100,000 people listening to you every month. But then you also had something interesting where you're like, I don't really feel it. Like, I kind of, like, from the outside looking in, you know, sponsored by Sprite, you know, 100,000 monthly listeners, but you're still kind of just like, you know, a guy hanging out at a house.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing, because you can hear it in your music that, you know, you're not full of yourself and you don't have this like false ego that it's easy to let it go to your head, but it seems like you seem like really grounded in it all.
Yeah, well, it's because it's all ego comes from perception. So an artist's job is to seem bigger than they are. Every artist seems bigger than they are, like all of them almost. And you see some artists who have 20,000 followers and they are on a nationwide tour and stuff like that, and they made a little money off of it, or you hear about, you know, but it's all perception. Like, you don't hear that, well, they had to open for a way bigger artist who their manager just happens to know their manager, and they really only sold 15 tickets in every city, and it was the biggest artist who sold 300. And even if you do a show that you perform in front of 300 people, the videographer's job is to make it look like it was 3,000, even if it was 300. So everything... Absolutely. A lot bigger than it is. And that's where ego comes in. But I feel like when you, or for me at least, when I started hitting some of these milestones that I was setting out to hit, and I got to where I was, it wasn't anything like what I thought it would be. Like, I was still just very small. And then, so ego got like stripped away. Like, it started being like, nah, 10,000 followers is not really anything. Like, 50,000 listeners is not really anything. So ego got like stripped away, and perception, like my perception grew. So it was just easier for me to see, like, yeah, nobody on my level, who were at the same level, is just headlining a tour in the United States and making any money at all. So me, I know where I am. I would go to Ohio still and do a free show. Cause I would, like, if I see someone on my level from the outside looking in, you see someone on my level doing like a national tour, you think, man, when I get 20,000 followers, I'm gonna just do a national tour. Me, like, how perception, like, you know, started changing, I know like there's either something behind the scene. Like it's just not what it seems. 99% of the time, people just seem bigger than they are. Even me, I realize that my job is to seem bigger than I am.
It's funny for me to think backwards. And 10 years ago in New Hampshire, Wiz Khalifa came up and performed Black and Yellow. He had mm-hmm. Mac Miller open for him.
Yeah.
Ten years ago, Mac Miller was opening for Wiz Khalifa. And people, no one thinks about that. No one probably even realizes. Mac Miller couldn't sell a show by himself back then, a small show. But
so comes in steps.
Yeah. Before you joined us, we were talking about Kanye. Okay. Because Kanye is making the news. So I have a hypothetical for you that I didn't even mention to Elliot yet. Here's my hypothetical. The last two albums Kanye released, he sampled a bunch on purpose to make them cost a bunch. And he made them this kind of non-top 40 style on purpose to lower the cost of his masters. That's my thought process with what Kanye is doing right now.
My take on that?
Anything. What do you think Kanye is trying to do right now? Or what he's been doing?
I mean, I know Kanye wants his masters. I know he's trying to buy them, and he's like, they're like not letting him get them, and he's upset, right?
Yeah. And well, he's just made it public. So the question is, how long has he wanted his masters?
He's probably wanted them for a while. And yeah, I mean, his music, the music he's put out recently hasn't been the, you know, this
good
trend.
The best thing he had was with Lil Pump. He featured on Lil Pump's song.
that could be, you know, that he wants to lower the cost of the.
Yeah. He's taking the school of Kardashian marketing. He knows what he's doing. I don't see him releasing music. I'm sure he loves the music, but he also knows that Universal could not make as much money on that music as other music Kanye has made.
I see.
I feel like there's a reason behind him doing this outside of everything else. And then he tweeted that he was going to wear Jordans until Adidas put him on the board.
Oh God. I mean, he's a card, man. I feel like he's not stupid at all, though. I feel like he always has an ulterior motive. I feel like there's always something underneath the surface level of what he's doing. You know, I feel like, but he is at the same time, he's a little bit off. So, you know, you just got to let Kanye be Kanye.
Maybe. What was it on SNL? Like Pete Davidson was like, Kanye, like, hey, look, I'm going through the same thing. And he kind of just like looks at the camera and he goes, if your doctors are telling you to take the medication, you just take it. Just take it. So Trey, this section here, say hi to Chester. It's my dog. This portion of the podcast here is sponsored by Flow Clothing Company. They're a company that was started by an artist, and they donate a portion of all sales to support mental health. And with 2020 being a hell of a year, it's really coming more to light recently, just overall mental health. But check them out at flowclothingcompany.com. But Trey, how would you describe your flow on a track? I know you've got many of them. How would you describe your flow?
I would just have to go with versatile, honest, heartfelt.
Good words. And who would you say is, if you had to pick two or three of the biggest influences on how you rap and how you approach what you do, who would those people be?
Chance the Rapper, number one. Drake is number two. And number three, like, alternates. I want to say right now, it's an artist I mean, it was Jack Harlow for a bit. Right now, it's an artist named Boogie. I like Boogie a lot. You know, I'm really listening to him a lot, and like, I'm like picking apart his like wordplay and like how he puts things together, and like, because I think it's like at a, such an elite level, and I just always challenge myself. Like, I think, you know, yeah. So I try to take a whoever I think is the best at like a certain angle. Like Drake is, you know, the king of execution. Like when he hasn't, like if you're an artist, you know, like what's in your head, it's kind of hard, not hard. It just doesn't always come out how you thought it would in your head. I feel like Drake is the king of this is what I want to do, and then actually doing it very well. He's the best like at execution I've ever seen. So I try to like look at him in terms of execution. Feel like Chance, I don't know, I look at him like he's versatile. He'll like, you know, make a lit song, he'll make a singy song, he'll make a gospel song, he'll make a, I try to do that. And then like wordplay, I'm looking at Boogie right now, wordplay. And you know, I just like storytelling. J. Cole is an amazing storyteller. If I'm looking at my storytelling, I try to like, how can I do it at that level? Yeah, so those are some good names. I'm happy with those names.
I'm happy with those names too. You could have picked a lot of, you could be like, oh man, you know, Tekashi 6ix9ine. It's just where I get my flow. And, I mean, you've got some good music, and you can tell that you're influenced by people who are versatile, because you don't just like have like one
sound,
you know, one move. Yeah, right. Yeah. You're like a versatile player. If I can compare it to basketball, like you can score many different ways. Giannis kind of has one move, you know.
Yeah.
Granted, Giannis is almost like Eminem. Like Eminem, really? In a way, let me put it this way. Like Eminem is Eminem, and he comes at you, and like he kind of like, that's what Giannis is kind of like. He's got like one style, and like boom, he just comes at you. Whereas like Kobe could come at you, he could post up, he could like, Kobe is like Drake in a way. We're like, oh, I need to sing right now, no problem. Oh, I need to make like a banger with Future. No problem.
Yeah.
Eminem is like Giannis, where he's like, I'm coming at you full speed, and you're either going to like it or not, but this is what I do, and get out of my way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I like that. And then J. Cole is like, who could J. Cole be like in this NBA analogy?
I like
Karl Malone.
Really?
Just like quiet, does his thing. Maybe like John Stockton. Just
really?
Like you don't think of him as being like, when you think of NBA greats, you don't, the first one that comes to mind isn't Karl Malone or John Stockton. But then you go and look at it and you're like, wait a minute, they did that? He did. Yeah. John Stockton did this? Yeah. What?
I like that one.
Because it's not like flashy. Like J. Cole isn't flashy. He just like is who he is, and he doesn't really care.
Yeah.
He's the opposite of Russell Westbrook.
And I love Russell Westbrook so much. Russell Westbrook, I love how in your face he is. But I wouldn't like that if it transferred over to a rapper. I wouldn't like that in a rapper. I like that in a basketball player.
Russell Westbrook is DMX.
For sure.
All right. Hey, man. Well, I think let's leave it to you here. What is it that you want to plug here today? Because, you know, we're going to hopefully get some people checking this out. Where can they find King Trey? What's the first thing that you want them to look at right now? If you had to say, here's the one thing that will hook you immediately, what is it?
Just hit my Spotify at King Trey, capital K, capital T, no space in between. And you can really just hit shuffle on my page, and I'm confident that, you know, whatever comes up was what you were supposed to hear, and that it'll hook you.
Spotify knows best.
Yeah, Spotify does know best.
Awesome. Well, King Trey from Chicago, 100,000 monthly listeners, crushing it, sponsored by Sprite. Check him out on Spotify, King Trey, no space in the middle. Trey, thank you so much for your time, man. I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. You guys have a great weekend as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Cool. Yeah, and then we'll edit this little part out. And okay. All right, so King Trey, he's crushing it. He's been working with us here at DeNovo for, I don't know how long, 8 months, a little while now.
I was just talking about this yesterday. He reached out to us as I was walking into a Chipotle one day.
Well, you're going to have to narrow it down. You go 8 times a week, so which day was that?
And I ended up, why? I don't know. It was lunch.
Someday at lunch. Well,
King Tallahassee. Trey,
okay, there we go. That narrows it down too. King Trey, check him out on Spotify. He's got some, actually, he doesn't have any music videos on YouTube. I looked the other day. We got to get him doing that. But yeah, interesting to hear how he describes his flow. Again, everyone checking us out here on the podcast today, check out flowclothingcompany.com. A clothing company started by an artist that we work with here at DeNovo, and portions of all the sales go to helping out mental health across the United States. But yeah, that's the business of music here this week. Kanye is going off the rails. We'll see what this Masters situation turns into. We'll see if DMX is indeed the Russell Westbrook of rap. And James, what do you want to leave them with today? What can we plug? We want to plug something.
We're going to plug new blogs. Is that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, our new blog is up. We have a lot of great information up there that's free. It's not a sales pitch. It's just great content to try to help independent artists figure out how to market their music and to gain some perspective on how to change their hobby, their fun music hobby, into a successful music business. Check us out on denovoagency.com. My name is Elliot Towsley. On behalf of James Landry, this has been the Business of Music podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Music podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. For more content like this on how to help yourself as an independent artist, join us at denovoagency.com and check out a lot of our free resources.